All I want to do is bring out the greatness in great people, and that's what I want to do for you. It was that phrase that Doc Childrey, the founder of HeartMath, told Howard Martin that has led to a 40-year journey of learning and leading others in an extraordinary understanding of the intelligence of the heart. Together, Doc Childrey and Howard Martin embarked on uncharted territory, delving deep into the quest to comprehend the vast spectrum of human and spiritual life, and even consciousness itself. This brave exploration eventually led to the founding of HeartMath, a cutting-edge research and development organization providing unique tools to boost performance, productivity, health, and well-being. In this interview with the Executive Vice President of HeartMath, Howard Martin, he shares his very personal story about how his meeting Doc Childrey literally took his life in an unexpected direction. This is the first time he's ever shared this story publicly. We also discuss life after 2012 and the acceleration of change, the practical application of intuition, and of course, the incredible work that HeartMath has done to bring about an evolutionary change in understanding the expanded role that the heart plays in our lives. Thank you so much for taking the time for us and to talk about the seminal work that you and Doc Childrey have done with HeartMath. But you know, before we get into the discussion, I have to ask you, how did you get into this work? What started you on this track?
Well, first of all, it's a long story. I'm going back over 40 years now. Mm-hmm. Doc Childrey and I have been friends since the early 70s. 1971 is when we met. Mm-hmm. So this goes back a long way. In those days, we lived in North Carolina, and it was a music scene back there. I was mm-hmm. a musician. Doc was around the music scene as a producer and all that. I was a drummer, and I met him through my manager. And, you know, back in those days, you know, there was a little bit of melding of spirituality and music. You know, the Beatles had gotten Maharishi and that whole thing. So there was a little bit of that was going on back then. And I became interested at age 21 in, well, I guess you could call consciousness. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't know what it was back then, but reading books on it, studying various things and all that. And Doc was a man that I met early on. He's just 4 years older than me, but he was a lot more aware than me. Mm-hmm. And a lot more mature than me, and I could figure that out really quickly. Mm-hmm. And he never approached me as anything other than being a friend who was caring for me, who wanted to help me as a human being.
Isn't that interesting?
Not a teacher, not a guru, none of that stuff. He did not label himself as that at all.
So the music brought you together, more or less.
Yeah, it did. And I remember, you know, I'll tell you a quick story. Not long after I met him, a few weeks later, I mean, I was thinking, you know, I'm not sure I like this guy. He's making too much sense because, you know, he was, you know, he could really say things that would, you know, very kindly, but he would hit right to the core of things, you know. And one day he came, I saw him come to my house and I didn't answer the door. And he knocked on the door and he finally said, you know, I think you're in there. Would you mind opening the door? I just want to come see you, you know. So I did, and he came in and sat down on the side of my bed there, and he just looked at me, and he said, I understand, you know, how you feel and all that. He said, let me just explain something to you. He said, all I'm about is this. He said, I'm just about helping to bring out the greatness in great people, and that's all I want to do for you. And he said it with such heart and such care, it just hit me right in the chest. It was like, whomp, you know what I mean? Just like, I could feel it, just like that love that he was putting out. And I just bonded with him right there. I just said, okay, just, you know, let's go.
obviously, this is pre-HeartMath.
Long, long before. We lived in North Carolina in the eastern part of the state, rural farm country is where we chose to live. And there was no consciousness studies and things going on. It wasn't like California where all these things were happening. You know, and after I left the music business, you know, I was poor. We didn't have any money. And we used to save up our money and for a long time and then drive 5 hours to Washington, D.C. to go to a bookstore that was there that had New Thought books called Yes Books. And we'd go buy everything we could and then take it back and read it and look at it and decide what was in it that made sense for us and what wasn't. And we'd practice the heck out of it. You know, we just work whatever we learned, just diligently worked it.
Right.
That led us to really a discovery of, you know, that it was really about heart for us. That, you know, everything sort of led back to that same place. It didn't matter what we read, it was about what you did with what you read and what you studied. And, you know, so many of the teachings and things referred to heart in these special kind of ways. It wasn't about a blood pump, it was about, you know, an intelligence we had or a consciousness we had. And so we took a very heart-centric approach to our exploration and got pretty soon into what I call uncharted waters. We weren't reading other people's things anymore or borrowing upon that as much. We had that as foundations, and we respected that and honored all those things and those teachings, but we moved in some new directions within ourselves. And we did it for 15 years in obscurity, with no writing of anything, never a title to it, just friendships and bonds that we chose to stay together and work on ourselves and meet and get together regularly and make it, you know, part of our lifestyle. Just the magnetics of that alone drew people to us. You know, just the purity of what we were doing, I think, magnetized others to us, and we eventually met people in California and places out here. And over years, they encouraged us to, you know, you have to take what you've done and you have to put it in a context of some kind that can be shared. And Doc was very unambitious about that. And he just said, no, we don't want to do that, or it's not time for that, or, you know, whatever. So we went many years and never did any of that. Then about in the late 1980s, 89 or so, a decision was made that we would. And we were going to merge with some folks that we met in California that had businesses and they had a consciousness institute and things like that. They were willing to transition all of that to the work that we had done, so to the work that Doc had really pioneered, and to see what we could do with it. So in 1990, myself, some others from North Carolina, we moved to California to a town called Boulder Creek, which is just north of Santa Cruz, and we started HeartMath.
1990.
And, yeah, 91 is when we officially set up the nonprofit that began it and all of that. But what's interesting about it is we had no business plan. We had no venture capital. We had none of that. All we had was our ideas, our beliefs, and everything else. And whatever we had accumulated in our, you know, before that, we just cashed that in. That's what we lived on. So we lived very poor for a long time. And we just put together what we could in terms of Doc started writing some books, put together some training programs, started our science.
With no capital whatsoever.
No capital whatsoever.
Wing and a prayer.
That's
and a passion.
That's right. Doc would say things like, yeah, if it doesn't work out, hell, we'll just get on a Greyhound bus and go back to North Carolina. You know, it's like, don't worry about it. So we did that, and it quickly attracted a lot of attention, and the research started to unfold, and a lot of very seminal events occurred, like scientists getting involved with us, like Carl Prebram.
Yes, of course.
Joe Kamaya, the father of biofeedback, and all these major scientists were very interested in what we had to say and began to work with us. And then we had things happen like a research study published in the American Journal of Cardiology, which then credentialized, you know, some of us, this is legit, these guys are for real. Corporate training began to take off. Won a big award from Motorola for the innovation and training that we brought into them. And the story goes on and on, you know, in terms of the things that unfolded. And so today, I mean, for me, my turning point, I guess, was the publishing of HeartMath Solution, the book that I published with Harper Collins back in 1999 now, and co-authored with Doc. That was an accident for me. I was simply following interest from publishers.
No accidents.
Yeah, maybe not. I was following up the interest from the publishers who were interested in publishing us. We were self-publishing. We published books, but we were self-publishing, and larger publishers started wanting us to do books, and I had never considered myself to be an author or writer or anything else. It just wasn't in my ambition or my thoughts about that's what I could do or would want to do. And, eventually, you know, in the discussions around that, it came up that I should be an author, and Doc said, let's co-author it together, and that's what happened. So the book is still selling today. It was a success when it came out. It's an evergreen book, which means it sells about as much today as it ever has.
Right. Perennial classic.
Perennial classic, yeah. And, you know, and so that put me in a position then with access to a lot of other people who did similar things who were important, and, you know, everything from celebrities to the other authors and sports personalities, you name it, and it, you know, opened that whole world up for me. And then the speaking started. So for the last, you know, 12 years or so, I've been doing HeartMath business, helping to run the businesses, which have gotten large now.
Right.
And also representing HeartMath as a spokesperson, speaker, and media person, and all that. So, busy life.
I have to say, I had no idea the conversation was going to go in this direction, but I'm so glad it has. You've told me and told our audience so much that we probably didn't know, but I have to make the statement. I use this quote all the time, and you have just underscored how true it is. When you follow your life's purpose, the universe will meet you more than halfway.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that you're talking about is so serendipitous. You know, you think of people, and now as a business person, I know that you understand the importance of business planning and organization. That's not to say we shouldn't do that, but isn't it beautifully magical how when you simply just follow in your heart, when he knocked on your door, mm-hmm. and you were inclined not to open it,
that's
but
right.
when he did approach you, interestingly, you felt it in your heart.
I did.
And that would then be the impetus to the life's work that you would do. That's a beautiful story.
I don't think I've ever really told it to the media person before. So it just came out today, and there it is. So,
I love it.
No accidents,
so
right?
Yeah, so. Well, you know, this will be a good segue because, of course, you're here at the Conscious Life Expo. You gave a talk, I believe, last night called Emerging After 2012, What's Next? So let's segue into that now
sure.
because we're talking about your journey. And I know a lot of people listening to this story will want to emulate that journey or at least that approach in some way. And I think now more than ever, now that we've maybe crossed that threshold, more people will be seeking that approach of really just letting their life unfold. So let's go into that. Emergence after 2012, what's next? And that's a big question.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps the biggest and most perplexing for many who are trying to figure this out. There's been a lot of speculation as to what December 21st, 2012 denoted. Did it denote a physical or tangible crossing point? Is it a subtle thing? Have we been in this shift for quite some time? What's going on right now? What happened after December 21st, 2012?
Well, you know, there was a buildup for many, many, many years about this. I mean, back, I'll even go back further. I mean, Doc used to tell me back years ago, I'm talking about 30 years ago, mm-hmm. that the years around 2011, 2012, all those years were going to be really windows of important opportunities. Mm-hmm. He knew that a long time ago. Mm-hmm. Never glamorized it, but he knew it. And so I've been looking at those dates a long time. And, you know, of course, back about, you know, about the year 2000, a lot of this movement began to get onto this 2012 thing, got mm-hmm. sort of popularized through the Mayan calendar stuff and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of anticipation about this, a lot of big buildup about this time. And we got to 2012 and the date of and all of that, and you know, it was a good day, I'm sure, for most people and many people, and there were celebrations and meditations and things all around the world, but nothing significant happened. I mean, there was no big similar event that marked the
right.
fact that there's a change occurring. So what I believe has happened to a lot of people, and I have understanding about this and compassion, is just, that's, you know, in the emotional energetics, there's a subtle disappointment,
mm-hmm.
you know, that we didn't see some major shift or didn't see something come through. Here's the thing. The time period that we live in is a time period of extreme transformation,
mm-hmm.
acceleration of change like never before in the history of humankind. That's for real. And but these things take time. There's cycles of time. They have to be integrated in over time. My estimate is that we're in a period of a window of time of about maybe 100 years to where we're moving from a baseline of third-dimensional consciousness to a baseline of higher fourth-dimensional consciousness,
mm-hmm.
which is a huge shift, especially in a tiny window. And my feeling is we're kind of in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
we're right in the middle of this. It's been going on before we got to December 21st, and it's going on. It's going to go on. But we're in the middle of it, and it's a huge change that's happening. I think a lot actually did happen around the 21st.
You do.
I really do. I think that there was a tremendous unfoldment of consciousness. It was integrated from universal source into humanity and beyond us. We were just a small part of the shift.
Mm-hmm.
But it has to be stepped down. You have to be careful in how this stuff gets integrated. I mean, I'll give you an analogy. You take a bottle of water right now. If I take I want to fill that bottle of water with a pitcher of water.
Mm-hmm.
If I just dump it, some water is going to get in the bottle. A whole lot's going to get on the floor.
Right.
If I carefully pour it, then I can fill that bottle. So if all of a sudden on the 21st or whatever, any days, we have this massive outpouring and everybody could see it, and it's this grandiose thing, we all knew the shift was real, most of that would get wasted.
Would be flooded.
It would be flooded. People couldn't handle it. They wouldn't know what to do with it. It would get wasted. So all that change that's occurring is happening faster than we realize, but it is going at an integrated pace where it's
mm-hmm.
integrating into consciousness in ways that can be turned into utility,
mm-hmm.
how we actually apply it. Now, as far as what's going on now, I have a counterintuitive view on that, I think.
Okay.
It would seem like, well, now that we're here, now we've had, you know, some facilitation, there's been all this change, now it's time to move on and really move fast and really go and, like, let's figure out what's next and let's project into the future and try to figure out how to solve our problems and all that. My feeling is it's not quite the time right now for that.
Mm-hmm.
What we should be doing more than that is we should be focusing more on what we're doing in the present.
Yes.
As opposed to projecting into what's going to happen in the future. And when I say that, I'm not talking about an absolute, there is nothing but the present kind of a place, but it's about being present and aware in whatever situation you're in, mm-hmm. bringing your full self to that, whoever you're with and whatever you're doing.
Right.
And not just being off on glamorous tangents about what's next and are the, you know, are we going to have contact with extraterrestrial intelligences or any of that stuff. It's all okay. I'm not down on it, but I'm saying the real fundamental shift is occurring in people that are taking a little bit more seriously mm-hmm. the changes they need to make and what they can give to any present giving situation or moment.
I couldn't agree more. Yes.
You know, I've been called things by people who interview me and things like that, like an enlightenment luminary, a futurist, a visionary, those kind of things. And I don't consider myself to be any of that. I think what I really want to be is an aspiring nowist, you know, a guy who can be with somebody and feel and touch their hearts and, you know, and experience theirs mm-hmm. in whatever moment that I'm in. And not so worried about what's coming next and all that.
Yeah.
So it's a time for us to breathe out a little, I think. You know, the tendency is to feel like we have to push and drive, and if we don't create the changes now, then something's going to blow up, and these are irreversible changes that we have to make, you know, now happen, and if our governments don't do this, then this is going to happen, and all these fear projections show up, and mm-hmm. it creates a sort of stressful, you know, mind-based drive
right.
to create change. There's an ease and a flow to this instead, that we find a way to dance with the rhythm of life, and we sort of ease and flow through this whole deal rather than push and drive and get all caught up in it.
Nature shows us that, does it not?
Yeah.
I've always found nature, it's more than a metaphor. It's really, of course, we're an extension of it and it of us. And if we follow the natural unfurling of the patterns in nature, I think what you're talking about is very similar. I want to bring up, you said something that kind of reminded me of a question I wanted to ask you about. You know, your passion is evident in what you're doing. And I recall watching an interview with you recently in which you you said that you learn to love people and yourself at a deeper level, and that's what this work has done for you more mm-hmm. than anything. And I think you just sort of touched upon that. That's so important.
That's right. That's the most important thing. You know, step back and look at what's this 40 years been about, and what's the most important part of it. And I have to say that I remember having made that statement in interviews here and there, and I'm mm-hmm. glad you reminded me of it, because it is about that. And wanting to love people and myself at a deeper level would be the greatest gift I've gotten from the 40 years of this deal. It isn't about being the author or the speaker or the business stuff that we do, any of that. It's really about what I can feel in life, about myself and about others.
So simple, and yet so difficult for so many.
It's elusive.
Yeah. What does a heart have to do with this emergence we're experiencing? How can we methodically use the heart, what you've learned through heart math and what you've shared, to be more present? And we're not saying that, as you said, in a new agey sense, but just being really, what I hear you saying is being more aware mm-hmm. of the present. And not being so concerned about something that's happening in the future. Actually, there is no such thing, in my opinion, as future. We can never measure that. But how can we integrate your research with being that present person?
First of all, I think that heart intelligence, which is the term that Hart Math uses, mm-hmm. is really, it's not ours. It's actually part of the evolutionary imperative associated with the shift. It's an intelligence that is intuitive. It's high speed. It's an intelligence that really has multiple aspects to it. I mean, we understand the physical heart's role being different than we ever thought through our research, but there's also the emotional heart. You know, mm-hmm. when you think about emotions associated with heart, like compassion, care, love, appreciation, those kind of things. And then you have the sort of spiritual connection that many people feel with heart. They recognize it's through their heart they connect with something larger than themselves.
Yeah.
You know? And then I'll flip it back around to just the street stuff, you know, means like people talk about play with your heart, sing with your heart, put your heart into it. And what they're saying is that go to this place inside yourself where your authentic self mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. and put that into what you do. And if you do, you have a better chance of moving beyond mediocrity mm-hmm. and a better chance of being able to accomplish things that you often doubt that you can.
Mm-hmm.
And so all that adds up to this sort of what we call heart intelligence, this place inside that we do access, people do get there, they find it in themselves, everybody does. And what we've done at HeartMath is develop a system of tools, techniques, methods, and technology, and then add science to it.
Mm-hmm.
The reason we added science to it is when we recognized when we started launching HeartMath that we were trying to take our personal heart-related experience into a context that could have societal impact.
Mm-hmm.
If we didn't do it differently, then heart stays in the same place it's been. You know, caught up in the respected realms of, but limited realms of, spirituality and philosophy, and not taken seriously in modern living. We also recognize, hey, you know, you put it out the regular way it's been put out before, you're going to end up being looked at by mainstream society as another heart thing in California.
Yeah.
So you better do it different. So science was our bridge. Science was never designed to take the heart out of heart. It was designed to give it an empirical understanding, because when things get empirical, when there's a belief's been verified through something like science, then the belief is stronger. So as people can believe more in their own hearts, then that adds to, you know, the whole thing. So what we've learned about heart from a physical standpoint is that it, and this is where, you know, a lot of people start getting on in the ahas and verification in themselves. The heart is a blood pump, the most amazing pump on, in the world that has ever been. But it's more than that. It's actually an information processing center in our bodies, and that's what most people didn't know. It communicates and sends information to the brain and the rest of the body, and does it in four ways. You know, things that were. What's interesting about this is it was scattered in the research literature, but the story never been put together. What our researchers did, Dr. Roland McCready and his team, is they created a story that someone can understand and someone like me can explain. So the heart's sending all this information to the brain and to the rest of the body. It's actually things like brain function are critically dependent upon the signals and information that comes from heart. Who knew? You know, we just didn't know. So when you added all that up and you have this research and this story that shows that the physical heart is more than we ever thought.
Right.
And that it's sending information, it's receiving information, it learns. This is amazing, but it actually learns and changes and does a lot of things. It has this sort of independent physiological intelligence. Then all of a sudden, we start believing more in the emotional heart and in the spiritual heart. And that when we say a change of heart changes everything, we see that that maybe is really true.
That's
what the research did. And so the research has gone way beyond that now into lots of things and going further now in the near future. And certainly in our social science research, there's been a lot that's accomplished. Looking more now at the energetics and connectivity between all living things and how all that relates to heart. And you know, there's a lot of exciting things that are happening.
Non-locality, would that be part of that?
Non-locality would be an aspect of quantum physics, which would be saying that, you know, in quantum physics, we're not limited by the paradigm of time and space. That Newtonian physics gave us, that can go out the window, and then it opens the possibilities of connections in a different way, in a much larger sense. So yeah, we know that, for instance, the heart has an electromagnetic field.
Yes.
It surrounds us in 360 degrees, radiates beyond the skin out into space, and that field will change depending upon what emotion we are feeling. Feel frustrated, it broadcasts. Feel appreciative or loving, it broadcasts. We know that. Now, though, if you think about that, that's an electromagnetic field. It's not an aura or subtle energy. It's like radio waves, or immeasurable electromagnetic field. You take the confines of time and space off of that, and then where does that field go? And what kind of a field is it? And where could it connect? And, you know, it gets amazing in terms of the quantum physics or non-locality type issues. It's like the connectivity between all living things, us, the cosmos, the universe, all that stuff opens up as a possibility.
And the heart being the conduit, perhaps, to
It's
that.
The conduit,
yes.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that's been my personal experience. You know, when I've had, you know, experiences that I would call, you know, that move beyond my normal, you know, sort of cognitive processes, you know, it's always been a heart-directed or heart-led thing. You know, it's never been some mind thing that I've willed my way into. It always came through your heart, and it always came through me being in a more loving and kind and caring place.
I'm really chomping at the bit to ask you this question. I recently did an article entitled Gut versus Intuition, Is There a Difference? What I intimated, it was more of a question than a fact because we don't know, but I'm very, I'm a big proponent of heart-based visualization, heart-based meditation. And yet I noticed that there's both here, the gut area, which would be considered the solar plexus, versus the heart, they both emit physical sensations.
They do.
And yet they seem somewhat different and could be triggered by something different. Is there a difference between emotion and feeling, gut, intuition, solar plexus, and heart?
Yes, there is. And let me explain it to you physiologically first, just to make it fun for you. you know, the heart actually has a very complex nervous system. Mm-hmm. Next to the brain is the most complex part of the nervous system we have. It's studied through a field called neurocardiology. That nervous system sends information to our brain, and that information enters through the lower centers, the medulla.
Brainstem.
Uh-huh. Goes right in through the limbic system, the mid-level brain, where a lot of our emotional processing takes place, and then terminates all the way into the higher perceptual centers of the brain, the neocortex. Now, in the gut, we have a nervous system, too. It's far less sophisticated than the one in the heart. But it's that gut nervous system that you feel getting funny feeling when you get upset, right?
Yeah.
It's that nervous system's getting a little squirrely in there, and you feel it.
Yes.
Well, that also sends information to the brain, but it only gets as far as the brain stem.
Interesting.
And that's instinctual. You know, it's like raw animalistic instinct is what that part of the brain is responsible for doing, right? So that gut brain gets to there. So it's just raw animalistic stuff, you know. Higher perceptions, discrimination, discernment, and all that are being influenced by the signals from heart back to brain through the nervous system that the heart has.
That is very key.
Yeah.
So what we're saying, and it's so funny how you listen to people, and I think there's so many people that say, you know, I have a gut feeling about this, not realizing that there is indeed a fundamental difference between a gut feeling and an intuition. And that's what I was sort of driving at in this article. So what you're saying is that feelings or emotions or sensations that are emanating from the gut area are really staying within the realm of locality.
In the brain.
Not passing the brainstem.
Right.
You know, within its own nervous system, but heart, the nervous system that's associated with the heart and those frequencies that are transmitted can surpass that and go non-local.
That's right.
Okay.
And they go all the way to the most critical thinking parts of our brain. Now, you know, intuition and gut feeling. Gut feeling may be just a common language for intuition. You know, intuition is something that's coming in now more and as part of the new shifting times. After 2012, what's next? Well, one of the things is access to practical intuition is on the increase.
Mm-hmm.
Intuition needs to be demystified and taken out of all being as glamorous as it is because there's a practical side to it. A woman once described intuition to me in a very interesting way. She said it was knowing what you know without knowing how you know it.
Yes.
And I thought that was beautiful. It's bypassing all the cognitive back and forth that we go through a lot of times and need to reach an understanding. But intuition, in a practical sense, is things like that still small voice in the heart, sometimes it's called, is give us the quiet nudges to say, you need to change this.
Mm-hmm.
You need to deal with that. You need to clean this up. You know, you need to put a little more emphasis on X. You know, that's intuition speaking. Intuition would be things like knowing in a conversation when it's time to say something and when it's time not to. You know, this gets down to what practical intuition is.
Mm-hmm.
You get the intuitive sense about all that. Maybe I don't need to say that right now. Maybe that should be saved for later. Maybe they can't handle that right now. You know, it's that kind of a sensitivity. There's all these sensitivities, and I'm beginning to play with this a lot more now, and to really trust in the intuition a lot more,
mm-hmm.
to let that be the director of things more.
Mm-hmm.
But to make it solid, you know, there's a term a business consultant used with me a number of years ago that I liked a lot about making business decisions. He called it informed intuition. He said you get all the information you can, you get your facts, you get things lined up, and then you back off from that and call a shot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, that's what you have to do. You have to go with your gut. Another way of looking at practical intuition would be, let's use a business example, hiring someone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can look at the resumes all day long. You walk into that interview with that person, and you look them in the eye, and there's certain things now, because of our laws, you can't even ask them certain questions.
Right.
You know, you can't even get down to what they really, you have to. It's against the law to ask them, you know, about their relationships or any of that sort of stuff. And you have to get a sense of this human being, and then you make that shot call.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's intuition, right? You're intuiting, you know, and you make the best call that you can. Now, that's heightening now. So in this new era, after the 2012 thing, one of the things that's going to be talked about more and one of the things that people can attune to more and experience more is intuition in a new way.
Mm-hmm. Practical intuition.
Practical intuition. Intuition is, you know, not just about intuiting the future, you know, but it's intuiting the now.
Right, absolutely.
Right in the moment of the now. And that leads to other things, too, that, we do get insights into new solutions to things and in new creativity and new things like that we do need to solve some of the world's problems. All that's part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll have a more useful and practical experience for people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And doesn't have to be looked at as something that is glamorous or misunderstood.
Yes.
Now, there's a study we did. You want to hear about that?
Absolutely. If you've got time, I think we have a little bit more time.
I'll be brief. We did a study. We were looking at what we thought was a precognitive process. Our researchers were trying to decode what would occur in the physiology through an intuitive experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had test subjects that were wired from head to toe. They were measuring brainwave activity and lots of heart activity and lots of changes in skin conductance and things like that. They were literally wired head to toe. And there was a computer in front of the test subjects, and the computer had been loaded with images, some of which were very horrific images,
mm-hmm.
and some were very pleasant. The computer was going through a random selection process on the images. In other words, nothing had been programmed. It was just set for randomly select. The test subject wired head to toe would push a button, and there would be a 10-second delay, and then the picture would emerge. And then the picture would go away, screen would go blank, another delay, and then another picture would emerge. And they were just sitting there, clicking the button, and the pictures were coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Researchers got all this data and began to analyze it. As they analyzed it, they found out, whoa, this is crazy. You know, what's happening in many cases is that the physiology of the person is responding to the upcoming picture 6 seconds before it's there.
Isn't that something?
It's doing what it would do if the picture was on the screen 6 seconds before it is. Now, they were, aha, this is great. So they did more analysis on the data, and then where it got really interesting is that when they finally got down to looking at the information chain
mm-hmm.
that was happening, is that the heart was the one responding first, not the brain.
Mm-hmm.
The heart was responding 6 seconds before, brain was a second and a half after that, and then the two came together and coupled at a frequency level, and then the picture showed up.
Right.
So it was, so what they ended up with was a study that showed that this intuitive type process was not cognitive, it was heart. It wasn't precognitive.
Right.
Cognition followed after the heart responded.
There's no question this supports what we've been talking about, that there is some non-local aspect
mm-hmm.
to the heart, and it is indeed the conduit between cognitive functioning and otherwise. So that is absolutely fascinating. I have heard a little bit about that, but to hear you elucidate it.
It was a published study in the Journal of Alternative and Complementary Medicine. It was
uh-huh.
big enough that it had to be published in two parts. One of the summaries in the study, basically what they said, I'm paraphrasing now, was it appears as if our physiology has the capability of determining future events, the non-local thing, that it operates, heart is operating in a field that is not bound by the limits of time and space,
mm-hmm.
that it's something that goes on all the time but that we are not aware of, and that we are becoming, in the future, more aware of it, and it will give us a greater ability to discern choices of because we have a... We'll have a picture of upcoming events, and we can respond to them differently.
Uh-huh. This is what's emerging after 2012, and we've got a long way to go, but we're seeing evidence that we're right in the midst of it. If there's one key message, Howard, that you'd like to leave with our listeners, what would that be?
Have compassion for yourself.
Mm, love it.
It's just the shift energies are strong right now. They're moving quick. You don't have to really worry about whether the changes are occurring or not. It's how we manage ourselves within the changes of it. And a lot of people are going through a lot of things. They're not equipped to go through this much change this fast. A lot of people are having stuff come up. A lot of things are spinning up for people now that are really gifts from their own spirit, giving them direction on what they need to clear out so that they can access some of the new that's happening right now. But the thing is that it can create a lot of internal discord, and people end up being hard on themselves, and they feel bad about themselves. They don't feel like they're doing enough. They don't feel like they're getting it, and all these kind of things. And that is not necessary,
yes.
Nor is it productive. And so my message to the listeners is to please be kind to yourself. Have self-compassion right now. Be gentle and easy. You know, go and have a talk with your own best friend, which is your heart.
That's right.
And find that comfort that heart offers, and let that be what you guide your life with, is that position of self-compassion. And then, of course, extend that to have more compassion for others.
Fantastic. Everyone, have compassion for yourself. Take that to heart, right?
That's right.
Okay. Howard, how can we find your work, and what should we be looking out for in closing?
Well, you can go to any of the HeartMath websites. There's a .com and a .org website,
okay.
HeartMath.com, HeartMath.org. We have the Global Coherence Initiative, which is this amazing project we have where we're beginning to measure now the effect of human consciousness on the energetic fields produced by the Earth. Mm-hmm. It's the Global Coherence Initiative. Please have listeners check that out. Something you can join for free and join with tens of thousands around the world who are participating in this. And lastly, if you want to learn about HeartMath, if you want to learn the tools and techniques that are behind what I've said today, go to heartmastery.com.
Heartmastery.com.
There are courses we have that people take from home. They're pre-recorded, and then we have live phone discussion groups every week. And there are people from all around the world taking these courses now. And they're given by myself, Deborah Reisman, our CEO, and I'm one of the Master HeartMath trainers, and a woman named Sheva Kaur. Mm-hmm. And I say that not just to be, you know, being commercial on your show, but a lot of times people say, well, listen, this all sounds great, but how do I learn it? You know,
yeah.
So we have we have 12 months of content there for people that want it, that we can help to teach people how to access their own heart. And it's heartmastery.com.
I love it. We will make sure to have all the links, every one of them that you mentioned, hooked up to the show. Howard Martin, thank you so much for your time and your insight, and thank you for coming from the heart.
It's been a pleasure. It's been a good way to start Sunday morning.
Absolutely. God bless. Take care.
Howard believes that the post-2012 world will require us to focus on the present, now more than ever. We must integrate an ease of flow in order to go with the shift. The heart will no doubt play an integral role in this process at all levels to assist us in true spiritual, emotional, and physical evolution. To learn more about Howard Martin and the work of HeartMath, make sure to visit the links listed below. Thank you for listening to Conscious Inquiry. Until next time, I'm Alexis Brooks.